Julie Crosby, Elizabeth Press, Nick Gillick, Hugh Grant, Jessel Noor, Vesta Gudars, John Randolph, Karen Crick-Meadows, Rakan Penny, Kellen Innocent. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
I assume I can get back on this road.
Yeah, but you're gonna have to swing around at some point.
What, you mean this doesn't connect to the, it's not an interstate, what the hell is it, the highway?
Are you kidding? You thought you were just gonna be able to drive straight on this?
Yeah, why not?
No, you're funny.
Thank you, but I'm not trying to be funny here. I went straight off an exit and I'm continuing now, thinking I can get back on the highway.
Oh, man.
I see the highway. No, I'm sure I can do this.
Alright.
You still think I'm funny? I mean, well, okay, there is a lot of trees and grass between us and the highway.
I mean, but go for it. That could just be an overpass up there, though. I mean, maybe there's an on-ramp. Fine. You know what? Yeah.
If I can see the highway, isn't that just like being on the highway?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe we'll see like a moose or something jumping out, because we're in sort of a wooded area now.
Uh-huh.
Oh, look, there's a sign for a truck hitting a wall.
Fast into a brick wall.
So that means there's a brick wall ahead of us, and we're about to hit it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, as soon as we get back onto the road, we're going to start recording for the show. This is all just preliminary.
Oh, I'm really excited.
This is for the affiliates to be able to pick up our audio and make sure that they're listening to the right feed.
I know. We need a tone.
Well, yeah.
Sorry, don't they have tones, you know, like, boop.
Yeah, you're the tone generator.
Boop.
Yeah, except it's not the hour. You can't really do that on the hour.
Sorry.
You can do a steady tone if you want. Yeah, a steady, like, test pattern tone. You want to do that? Too low. Too low. Too high. Thought I wouldn't get that, didn't you?
Yeah, I know. I was like, hey, look what road we're on.
Telephone road? Whoa.
Look what road we're on.
I think you need to take a picture of that. Hold on, let's take the old camera
out. Where's the camera? And, by the way, there's no on-ramp over here. I think you still have to turn around.
Okay, maybe there's no on-ramp, but we know why we're here, at least. We found Telephone Road.
We found Telephone Road, for crying out loud. All right, I'm taking the picture. Ready?
Take the picture. Something
you
even
want
weirder.
To zoom up?
You know, you're the photographer. Take the damn picture. Get out. Yeah, go ahead.
All right, don't.
This is how it ends, folks. Okay. Kyle's getting out. I'm going on. Bye! Sick of him anyway. Somewhere in Ontario, we have no idea where. Okay, now some other cars are coming upon the scene, seeing Kyle taking a picture of a street sign like no one's ever done before, ever.
Awesome!
Yeah, well, now we got a guy with red things on top of his pickup truck, so maybe he'll think it's awesome too.
That was so cool.
He doesn't care.
Those are firefighters.
Firefighters. Fire department. That's cool. They have firefighters up here.
Too.
Awesome.
Right, I'm turning off the camera. I got some great ones, though.
Cool. Now, look at that street sign there. The road name is just 627-406.
Wow. I think it's pointing to addresses.
Maybe, but it's just kind of weird to see that on a street sign. I'm still going to go straight ahead, because I think there's an on-ramp, and if there isn't, maybe there'll be a computer road. Something equivalent. We're still going parallel to... it's called the 401. That's right. We're on the 401. So
can I just voice my sinking suspicion that we're going to have to turn around and get back on at the on-ramp?
Okay, but you can say that, but here's the thing. There aren't a whole lot of on-ramps. We continue to go parallel to this highway. I think this is the equivalent of a service road. In fact, I think this is a service road. It's going straight as the highway is. So
highway looks like it was kind of going left over there, E.
It might be going left, but it's going to come back, or we might go left a little bit too. Isn't this a nice scenic road that we're on, and we're able to go as fast as we want because nobody else is on it?
Yeah.
These are the little struggles you have to deal with when driving in strange lands.
Struggles?
Well, it's, you know, I can't say 100% I'm sure that I'm doing the right thing.
You're embracing getting lost. Who does that?
yeah, I do that. Oh, and we're in a 60-kilometer maximum zone now, so we're going to 60 kilometers an hour.
Is this a telephone truck coming towards us?
Are we still on Telephone Road?
I believe we are on Telephone Road. God, look at the trees. That's such a beautiful yellow. Is that a telephone truck? Or is that
orange and red. It does look like a telephone truck.
Is that a Bell?
Bell, there was a telephone truck. Oh, my goodness. Bell Canada. Wow.
Bell Canada telephone truck.
Responding to a report of somebody taking a picture of a telephone road sign.
Yeah, I'm sure we have to pay like taxes and fees and stuff on the picture, and then they have a service charge.
There's a Bell Express for you dish on somebody's house. Bell seems to run everything, and what Bell doesn't run, Rogers runs.
That's right, because Rogers answers to Bell.
I don't think they do, but
well, they should.
I think one of their slogans is "We answer to you," which is a good slogan for a phone company. But
yeah, and by you, they're referring to Bell, because he invented the phone.
Okay, you can tell yourself that, I suppose. Okay, we're going up a hill now. Maximum is still 60, but it's so nice and picturesque here. You can see nothing but the trees, and that sort of dismays me, because that means we can't see the road anymore, the highway. But we're still heading in the right direction, Kyle. I mean, I think we're all right.
I completely disagree.
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, you're entitled to that. But unless this road takes a sharp turn somewhere, I think we're going the right direction. And as long as you're going the right direction, it's not like you can get lost in Ontario.
I'm sorry, the right direction is 401.
Oh, wait, that's Long Island you can't get lost on. Ontario, I understand you really can get lost in. Yeah, like severely lost, like for the rest of your life, which won't last long if you get lost in the wrong place.
Yeah. I mean, it is scenic. We haven't really taken any... What am I saying? No, we are on Telephone Road.
We're still on Telephone Road, to source on.
Yeah. We're on Telephone Road. This has nothing to do with the highway, and I don't see any on-ramps.
This is a byway. Highways and byways. That's what it's all about, and we've been on the highway. Now appreciate the byway, damn it.
Diamond Farm Book Publishers. That was kind of cool. It's like a tractor, a little sign with a tractor, and book publishers.
Well, that's good, but I think those Canadian flags in front of people's houses, that's kind of interesting. I think the highway is still to our left. I'm pretty sure it is. It might be way to our left, but I think it's over there.
What in the heck makes you so sure? I just can't see it.
Right, that's why I think it's there. I didn't say I knew it was there. If I saw it, I'd be able to say that for sure. But I see things like antennas rising above the trees, and they usually put those by highways, and looking out there, I see sort of what looks like a clearing through the thick underbrush.
Well, you know what this means. We can't talk about anything until you get onto the highway.
No, this is all still the preamble and more or less a mic check. But once we get on the highway, that's when we begin the show.
Right. So none of this is actually going to air.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, if you're the engineer and you're airing this, you're in big trouble now because this is not supposed to go all over there.
Follow instructions.
We're going to start cussing soon because I know that's how this is going to end up. When this road... you see up ahead what it's going to do? It's turning to the right. That's what I was afraid of. Yeah, Kyle, I was afraid of this road veering away from the highway. What do you have to say for yourself now? Mm-hmm. That's the sound of Kyle not knowing what to say to my doubts about where this road is going. And where we're going on it.
I've been quite clear, okay?
Quite clear.
Quite clear.
I still think we're going to be okay. I do. At least... Oh, look, there's a road going to the left. That's a bit...
Telephone...
No exit.
White Oaks.
Okay, I like that. That road said no exit, went to the left, which means there can't be an exit because there's a highway there. There's a stop sign up ahead. But, you know, it could be nighttime. It could be snowing. And you see where this guy came from? Where'd that guy come from? He came from the left. I'm going to go to the left because I think that might go to the highway.
Oh, no. You're turning left on Christiani?
Christian.
Christiani. Look at it. It's
That's not how you pronounce that word.
Dude, there's an I at the end of it. You look.
Oh, I didn't see that. Okay, yeah, you're right.
Christiani Road.
All right. Well, now things have taken an interesting turn. Well, the telephone road continues here if you make a right. But where does that road go?
It's sort of a zigzag now.
You know, I would turn around in a heartbeat if this wasn't called Telephone Road. I think that's what's guiding us here, and that's what's making us continue in this direction, other than my obstinance. I don't think you can go wrong with Telephone Road.
Would indignance be another good word?
I'm getting there.
Okay. That's a cute barn. Oh, I like that.
Oh, you saw a barn. You would not have seen that barn, Kyle, if we hadn't gone down Telephone Road.
Okay.
Something to think about.
Fine. You know what? If you need to be right, that's fine. We'll just continue. I wonder why this is called Telephone Road.
Why, I'll bet every house here has a telephone in it.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that big satellite dish in front of somebody's house.
Big dish.
It's communicating with aliens with that thing.
Yeah. Where do you suppose people go to get, like, groceries and stuff out here?
It's a good question, and I suspect we'll find out if we keep... Now, that looks promising up there. See, we're going up a hill, and when we get up to the top of that hill, I bet we can see the damn highway. As long as we don't exceed 60.
You're starting to curse.
I know. I told you this was going to happen. Yeah, look to the left. You don't see a highway anywhere. Just see nothing but trees. This is a bad idea, man. This is a bad idea. Look how thick the trees are to the right, though. Wow. Imagine running around in there. Grizzly bears or whatever hangs out.
So if we saw a moose on Telephone Road, does that mean there's a moose on telephone? All right, that was terrible. Sorry.
Wait, I'm trying to figure out what that means, moose on telephone.
Moose on the telephone. Yeah, I mean, moose don't use telephones.
No, that's true. Neither do raccoons or squirrels or any of those animals. So I'm not sure why you're singling out the moose.
Well, I mean, they're so much bigger than a telephone, it would just be sort of humorous if you saw a moose on a telephone.
Well, we each get our laughs in different ways, I suppose. You know, this road goes on for a great distance. And, we don't have GPS, so we're not relying on that to get us out of the fixes that we...
Yeah, how about that? How about that? We don't have GPS.
You know, there used to be...
What kind of Stone Age are we living in?
Well, you know, that was the whole 20th century. People didn't travel around with these GPS crutches to get them out of any jams. It's called exploring, and if we knew that we could get on the interstate... I keep saying interstate. They don't have states here. It's not even...
Expressway.
I don't know if they call it that either. Just the highway. If we knew we could get on the highway straight ahead, all the fun and mystery and danger would be taken out of this.
Yeah, but do you know how much easier it would be to get around if we had GPS?
My point exactly. Too easy. A little difficulty is important, I think. It's part of the adventure, And we don't know how this is going to turn out. We're sort of just flying by the seat of our pants. Is that the right phrase?
Yeah.
Well, you know, now the speed limit's going down to 50. Boy, 50 kilometers an hour is about, what, 30? 30 miles an hour? Got some warehouses here.
Yeah, it's produce distribution centers.
Maybe that's where people go to get their groceries.
Yeah, they skip the retail store. Wow, so 17489 Telephone Road.
Well, why'd you give out that person's address?
Oh, no, we were talking about the distribution centers. That's the distribution center.
Okay.
If you want to get your produce.
Sounds like an advertisement now.
I didn't advertise.
Well, you just said if you want to get your produce, go to this particular address on Telephone Road. Now everybody's going to listen to that. Well, okay, this isn't going to air, so I guess we don't have to worry. But still, if they were, that could be construed as an advertisement.
Yeah.
It's a school bus.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't think they actually sell anything. They're probably a business-to-business, like, distribution thing, so I don't think you could actually buy anything from them. Unless you're another business, you know, then maybe you could.
It's entirely possible.
Hey, there's a telephone road... sewer station. Okay, never mind. That's not telephone related.
No, unless there's a phone in it, but...
Yeah. It said sewer station, though. I thought it was like a data closet, you know.
I gotta say, for a road that goes nowhere, this road really takes a long time to get there. And it's straight, too.
That made no sense at all.
Yeah, okay. Alright, I'll give you that. But do you see what's ahead? Do you see what's ahead, Kyle?
I see an intersection.
Traffic lights. Traffic lights mean intersection, yes, but they also mean big intersection, and there's so much traffic here that they need a traffic light. And do you see what just passed? There was a truck. A truck just passed. Trucks come from highways.
And I see a porta potty.
Are you interested in using either one?
I have to pee.
Okay, fine.
Can I just
so use the payphone? Even better, use the porta potty.
Okay.
And there's a gas station. You know, I'm convinced this is the entrance to the highway. So I'll just sit over here and await your acknowledgement of me being right.
Talk to yourself.
No,
you're not. You're talking to the world. I'm sorry.
Talking to the entire world.
We're recording. I forgot we were recording.
They know I'm right, though. They already know that.
I forgot we were recording. I'll be right back.
Okay.
I really got to go, though.
All right.
You know, I'm glad. Telephone run was great, though.
It was great.
Okay, yeah. All right. One second.
That's Kyle. He really has to go, and I couldn't agree more.
Or is that really not something we should air?
I don't think we should.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to make a left turn here because I suspect this is where the highway... the highway has to be in this direction anyway, but that's where I saw a truck coming from, and the gas station is here. You know, anytime you want to concede that I was right all along, just feel free.
Sure. Yeah, I will.
You will right now. You're saying I'm right. You're saying the highway is ahead.
No, you said when I feel like, yeah, I will.
You will. Okay, you're not now, though. All right. I'm just curious, you know.
You said any time, right?
Any time. Well, you know, the sooner the better for you, because if we're on the highway and that's when you concede, you know, it's not going to... See, I see the highway now. We're approaching the highway. In fact, it's too late for you to concede, because it's so obvious now that I was right. And by doing this, we traveled along telephone road, something none of these people on the highway can say they did. Speechless. All right. Well, in a moment we'll be... Oh, no. Does it only go one way? Oh, no, east. Okay. We want to go east. East on the 401 towards Kingston, a town we have no intention of visiting. In a moment we'll be traveling at highway speed and we can begin the show. Okay, mic check. Stony Brook level. Are we good? All right, let's begin in 3, 2, 1. Well, here we are on the highway. We're heading east in Ontario. I'm here with Kyle. Say hi, Kyle.
Hello.
We've been having an amazing time up here in Canada, just sort of traveling around, exploring different cities and towns and things like that. And... Kyle, your first time really in the eastern part of Canada. I know you spent some time in BC, but what's your initial impressions of the place?
I really like it. It's fun up here. That's correct. I've never been to the eastern parts of Canada, and we've actually been to 3 major cities and many small ones in between.
You know what, Kyle?
What?
We're going to go to a 4th major city in just a little while. We're on our way to Ottawa.
That's right. We're going to Ottawa.
Ottawa is the capital of the country.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It is. It's the capital of government for the entire country.
Yeah, the entire country. We have been so far, we drove across the border. We've been to Montreal, went to Quebec City, and then we journeyed over to Toronto. And we stopped in a few other places, too. But why don't we talk about how we started this trip, because I think that's kind of interesting, too. First of all, the purpose of the trip is not to do radio, not to have fun, not to... keep alive from this truck passing me. Hang on. How you doing? Yeah, when you're holding a microphone, I guess that looks kind of strange while you're driving. No, the purpose of this trip was to get the smart car fixed.
Yes, correct. You've been having problems with the smart car, and on our way up, you know, it would only do about basically the speed limit, and so we slowly made our way up towards the border to get this diagnosed by the Canadian smart dealership, because they have the computer equipment and the service information, the manuals that are appropriate for this vehicle.
Yeah, I've been having a lot of trouble with the smart car over the last few months. Started with some kind of fuel issue where the car just wouldn't start at all, and have some really good mechanics locally in the Stony Brook area who are able to install a bypass switch. Maybe Kyle could quickly explain what that switch does.
Yeah, so there's a relay that actuates the lift pump for fuel out of the tank and pushes it towards the injection pump in the motor. And the relay failed, and they traced it back to the relay and couldn't actually locate where the relay was, but that it was failing at the relay and not delivering power to the pump. And what they did is wire the pump directly to the battery with a small switch. So every time you wanted to start the smart car, you would get in, flip the switch to turn on the fuel pump, and then switch on the car normally and it would start. And as a side effect of that, every time you turned off the car, you'd have to turn off your fuel pump, which got to be a bit of a game, but I think you handled it pretty well, and it worked for a little while there, and then you ran into some other difficulty.
Well, you're also skipping over the very first time I drove the car a distance and forgot to turn the switch off and drain the battery, so I had to get rescued by AAA.
Well, that's what I mean by game.
Yeah, and you know, the battery is located under the passenger seat, under the passenger floor, actually. So I got some strange looks from the AAA guy when he came to give me a boost. But we eventually got it running, and I never made that mistake again, at least not for as long as I did. But yeah, the other problem, as you mentioned, was with keeping the speed. And apparently the car is in something called limp mode, where basically it wouldn't shift, or I couldn't shift it at the proper speed. For instance, say I'm in first gear, it would only go so fast and no faster, and that speed is not fast enough to shift into second gear, so I'd have to do that manually, and it just was a very awkward driving experience. It took a long time to accelerate up to highway speeds, and just made the trip a bit more challenging.
I'd add that that's what it felt like. I mean, limp mode is a way of describing what was going on. You could also say it didn't have any top end, or the pedal would only have power until halfway, and then there was nothing left. You couldn't accelerate beyond. As we soon learned, there was much more wrong and in store for us. But so the difficulties getting up, we'll add to that later, but the difficulties made an interesting drive up. And but we were able to entertain ourselves, and we stopped on the way.
Yes, we did. We stopped at, we're not going to say where we stopped. We'll just say that we got something known as Chernobyl wings. These are wings that are extremely hot, and I mean hotter than you would ever expect. And they're called Chernobyl for a reason. And what we did was we got this, we got a basket of how many? 30 of them?
Yeah, it was 30 pieces, 15 connected pieces, but it's 30, you know, there's a wing and then a drum and that kind of thing. I don't know, they're just real, real good wings, and yeah, we got a bucket of them.
Well, yeah, you say they're real good wings now, but the first thing you did when you opened up the bucket was lick the top of it, and the expression on your face is something I think I'll never be able to wipe out of my memory. And when I had the first wing, I was wondering, how in God's name am I ever going to get through 15 of these? Even this one I'm having trouble with, and I think you were pretty much fearing the same thing. We had this bucket of 30 wings, and we had to finish them.
Yeah, I was tearing up. I thought I'd be a real wise guy and actually just wanted to know how hot these wings were. And the lid of this bucket of wings had some of the Chernobyl sauce on it. And I was, you know, just kind of being a jerk. And I just a wise guy and just pulled the top off and licked it to really see what we were dealing with here. And
I got to tell you, that was the break-in. As it turned out, at the time, I was concerned. I mean, I was sort of tearing up, getting a, like, trying to get it out of my mouth, actually. It was really, 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 really hot. I mean,
straight out of a cartoon where your face just turns completely red and, like, a little steam engine, like, thing comes and blows some steam up.
Yeah, and I was, you know, I couldn't stop commenting, and, you know, meanwhile, my mouth is burning, and I'm sitting here saying, whoa, like, oh, my God, you know, how is this ever, how are we going to eat one of these? It was really that bad. I mean, I couldn't fathom how I was going to eat one. You know, I had just gotten a couple drops of it, and good Lord, it was really, 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 really spicy. But I think that ended up helping us pace the trip, because we could only do about one an hour or so.
No, we did better than that. Maybe it was one every 20, 25 minutes. I think we, yeah, because it's like a 7-hour trip, so we were able to pace it pretty well.
No, I agree. I think we chose the pacing, but what it amounted to is that you got used to it, and then you could eat more, and then, you know, we were like, you know, let's keep them for the trip, and that's how we sort of chose to pace it out a little bit. But you're right, I mean, it was pretty tolerable after you got the first one or two, and then we said, hey, you know, these will be great a couple miles ahead, and it really was good to pace out, set a goal, and then have a wing or two at that next goal, and it's a long drive, so.
Yeah, so it serves two purposes. One, you get through the wings. Two, you build up stamina, and three, you basically make the drive more quick, I guess, because you say, okay, at the end of this highway, I'm going to have another wing, and then before you know it, you're at the end of the highway, and you have to have another wing, and and as far as building up stamina, it's incredible how your taste buds change, because after a while, they just didn't seem so bad, and we were able to actually get through them. That first one, wow, that first one, I had no idea how I was going to be able to continue.
Yeah, it was amazing, but that was an impeccable idea. I really, really enjoyed that, going up to the border and just talking and listening to some radio and some music, and boy, you know, just eating some great wings on the way. It was great.
And the last wings we had after we crossed the border, a sort of a celebration that, yes, we're in Canada now, and we're going to finish off these wings. And as far as this being a great idea, yeah, I agree. The first time I did this, actually, I traveled up with Red Hacked a number of years ago, and that's where I first realized how much fun that could be, just basically having wings as sort of mile markers or 100-mile markers, whatever you want to say. And I also learned very quickly, it's a bad idea to rub your eyes at any point if you're having wings like this. And, you know, I had that in mind this trip, too, yet somehow I was still able to get hot sauce into my eyes. I think it might have been secondhand contact or something. And in fact, the day afterwards, if I touched my eyes with any part of my hand, I would still feel, even after washing my hands and everything. So it's Chernobyl wings. They're serious. So anyway, we made it to Canada in one piece. Montreal, that's our first stop. We dropped off the smart car to get it fixed. Now, we're recording this now. It's, what day is today? Today is October the 13th? 13th.
Yeah, today's 10-13.
10-13. Does that mean something? Because we've been through all these meaningful days lately.
Well, it is Halloween, and 13's a scary number.
Yeah, but it's not Halloween, because Halloween's the 31st.
Well, it's the month where...
It's dyslexic Halloween.
Right. Okay, yeah, okay. All right.
All right, well...
I'll roll with that.
Okay, but the point is, as far as significant days, 10-9, the 9th of October, was John Lennon's 70th birthday, and everybody was playing John Lennon music when we were in Quebec City at that point, and just incredible. You go from shop to shop, and everybody had a different song on. And, of course, all the radio stations were, too. It was a big deal, big event. Then 10-10, well, October the 10th, 2010, 10-10-10, and it works, you know, even if you're in Europe and you say the date the other way. So that was kind of cool. I got to put a date on one receipt I was signing, and it felt good to do that. And then 10-11, the 11th of October, was Thanksgiving Day in Canada, so that was significant as well. So we had all these significant days in a row, which I thought was kind of cool. But back to Montreal, your initial impressions of that city, which you had never been to before.
Yeah, we got a taste of the suburbs and sort of the outlying tips of the city. And the metro is really great. We were staying on the outside of the city and sort of just would go below ground two flights of escalators, and you grab a, we got a couple day pass to the metro, and the metro you pointed out was modeled off of the Paris metro system, and we learned a great deal about that, and it got us around everywhere. Some of the things we noticed are like it runs on both rail track and rubber tires, and it has a electrical rail on each side. So you're looking at four tracks that are metal, and then one set that's two more that are cement for the rubber tires. And they're really smooth and really quiet.
They are. And, you know, we always get into, I always get into these debates with people while standing waiting for a subway or a metro to show up, saying, that's a third rail, that's where the electricity is. No, it's that one there, it's a second rail. And, you know, you're afraid that someone's going to try and prove it. As you say, this was a different system. It's not like New York where you have an obvious third rail that has that wooden thing on top of it. There are four rails. There's the two rails that supposedly is for the train, even though these are rubber wheels.
They're sort of the guide rails?
Guide rails, I guess they are. And then you have the two on the outer part.
Yeah, the two on the outside are for electrical, or they also had sideways rubber tires, though, for more sort of shock guiding, you know, keeping the train from, like, wobbling too much as it's turning and that kind of thing. It's very interesting. It's a very solid way of designing the track and what you're actually rolling on, and it really shows. It's very quiet, and I will add that we looked for the third. There's no signs. We've talked about safety on the show before, and there's no, like, signs, no people.
Well, there were signs that said this number of volts. It just didn't tell you exactly where.
Yeah, at the very end, right before the tunnel, just in case you're thinking about wandering through the tunnel, which is a bad idea to begin with. But nothing on the track in each station really identifying. You know how they have pictograms of some guy getting shocked or danger, nothing like that. I don't know. Really enjoyed that. I mean, the ticket system was RFID based, similar to, like, the Oyster cards that we're seeing in Europe now.
Very smooth. I mean, we just went and got. Well, except for the machine that didn't take credit cards.
That machine was very bad. Go ahead and explain. Yeah.
Well, it said it took credit cards, but every single one of my cards it rejected for some reason. So I had to put cash in, and cash got to be an issue because I didn't really bring all that much to change. We were trying to just pay with credit cards for as many things as possible, but the machine made it important for us to use cash. We got a 3-day pass, but it worked flawlessly. You got this little RFID card, which you would simply slap on the turnstile as you walk through. You could do the same thing on a bus, and it was great. It was very convenient.
And trams.
Well, no, they didn't have trams in Montreal, did they? Wait, I'm confused. There's so many places. Did they have trams there?
I believe they did.
No, I don't remember.
Downtown.
Okay, all right.
Did they not?
I don't know. I know they had buses. Were on buses.
Maybe those were buses downtown. Boy, I'm getting all confused now because we've been on so many good systems. Be that as it may, the stops were really cool. And really interesting.
Testing out paint on this road.
Yeah.
They, for some reason, this part of the road, they're testing all different colors of paint. There's a sign for it, and rumble strips, too. I don't know if you can hear them. Orange and yellow and white. Okay, we're past it. I'm not sure why they do that, or why they can't do that in a parking lot, but that was kind of entertaining.
That must be very confusing for people that take things very literally.
I know they have trams. It's true. I know they have trams. God, what kind of traffic regulation do you think that would... Wow. They have trams in Toronto, they have buses in Quebec City. And they have those cute little electric buses in Quebec City that hold like 8 people maybe.
Yeah. Those are really cool. Yeah.
I don't know why they don't have those everywhere because they're so tiny and quiet and non-polluting, and they're great for short distances. In Suffolk County, where this program is emanating from on Long Island, we have a bus system that, for whatever reason, is not used by a lot of people. I remember when I was a kid, you'd see a lot of people on the bus, like maybe all the seats would be taken, but these days I see 2, maybe 3 people, at least on the lines that pass by me. And a nice little electric bus not only would be more economical as far as how many people were transported, but might encourage more people to ride them because they just look so cool. And obviously cost less to run. and are better for the environment. I don't know. I wish I would see more buses like that. Look up Quebec City electric buses. You'll see a picture of these things. They're really awesome.
Yeah, back where I'm from on the West Coast in Seattle, there's very small buses. They're like shuttle buses or access buses is what they call them in some places. But they're diesel or they're kind of trucks or vans and stuff. I think these electric ones, just the novelty is really kind of interesting. I think people would be attracted to riding something like that. And one other thing about just the stations I was going to say is that it seemed like a lot of the brick and the design reminded me a lot of when we were in Prague. Obviously not as deep down, but it just felt so solid. Every stop we were at in Montreal was just firm, you know, and just very, very thick concrete. And
congratulations, you've been selected to receive a free photo wall calendar from Vistaprint. Visit Vistaprint.com/Pandora2010 or click on the Vistaprint banner ad to start designing your wall calendar with personal photos, icons, and text. Order today and get a special bonus offer of 50% off all Vistaprint holiday products, including holiday cards, labels, photo books, and more.
One thing, I don't know why. It doesn't even matter how hard you try. Keep that in mind. I designed this rhyme to explain in due time. All I know, time is a valuable thing. Watch it fly by as the pendulum swings. Watch it count down to the end of the day. The clock takes life away. It's so unreal. Didn't look out below. Watch the time go right out the window. Trying to hold on to, didn't even know. Or wasted it all just to watch you go. I kept everything inside, and even though I tried, it all fell apart. What it meant to be will eventually be a memory of a time I tried so hard and got so far. But in the end, it doesn't even matter. I had to fall to lose it all. But in the end, it doesn't even matter.
One thing, I don't know why. It doesn't even matter how hard you try. That in mind, I designed this rhyme to remind myself how I tried so hard. In spite of the way you were mocking me, acting like I was part of your property, remembering all the times you fought with me, I'm surprised it got so. Things aren't the way they were before. You wouldn't even recognize me anymore. Not that you knew me back then, but it all comes back to me in the end. You kept everything inside, and even though I tried, it all fell apart. What it meant to me will eventually be a memory. I tried so hard and got so far, but in the end, it doesn't even matter. I had to fall to lose it all, but in the end, it doesn't even matter. I put my
out, nobody knows. No. To the stars if you really want it. Got a jet pack with your name on it. Above the clouds in the atmosphere. Just say the words and we out of here. Hold my hand if you're feeling scared. We're flying up, up, out of here.
Here we go. Chop the streets of Tokyo, get you fly kicks. Girl, you always on my mind, got my head up in the sky, and I'm never looking down, feeling priceless. Yeah, where we at, only few have known. Want some next level Super Mario. I hope this works out, cardio. Till then, let's fly, Geronimo. Here we go.
But I ain't never seen a face like yours. You made me feel like I could touch the planets. You want the moon, girl, watch me grab it. See, I ain't never seen a star this close. You got me stuck by the way you glow. I'm like, oh, 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 oh. I'm like, oh, 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 oh.
Here we go.
Me to come down, says boy, quit fooling around. I told her I love the view from up here, warm sun and wind in my ear. Will watch the world from above as it turns to the rhythm of love. We may only have tonight, but till the morning sun, you're mine. Sway to the rhythm of love. Well, my heart beats like a drum, a guitar string to the strum, a beautiful song to be sung. She's got blue eyes deep like the sea that roll back when she's laughing at me. She rises up like the tide the moment her lips meet mine.
Satellite dish. You tried to fix me for the game. You just made me loose.
Ba-ba-ba.
you'll still be humming along.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to Stony Brook University men's basketball here on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. Tonight, round one of what could be the marquee matchup this year in the America East, as the defending conference champion, the Vermont Catamounts, are in town to take on the defending regular season champion, the Seawolves of Stony Brook University, a Stony Brook team with its eyes set on the title that Vermont captured last year and that automatic berth into the NCAA tournament. Two terrific matchups last year between these two teams, and it was expected that with Marcus Blakely no longer with Vermont, now on to the NBA D League, that this Vermont team would take a bit of a step back, but that has not been the case. They've been tremendous in the non-conference part of their schedule. They lost to Connecticut by only 16 points. They are 9-3 on the year, have not lost yet on their home floor, look very much like the Vermont teams of old. Meanwhile, for the Seawolves, some struggles in the non-conference part of its schedule. They've righted the ship, apparently, with back-to-back wins, a non-conference victory over Colgate right here in this building a week ago Wednesday, and the opening conference win coming Sunday afternoon down in Baltimore against UMBC, a 64-56 victory over the Retrievers to get Stony Brook off and running in the America East portion of its schedule, 1-0 in the conference. Tonight, the opening conference game for Vermont. Good evening to y'all. Along with Jeff Bernstein, I'm Mike Solano. Kurt Hilton joining us in just a little bit as well. And Jeff, you were here last year. Tremendous atmosphere when Vermont came in. The game where the Seawolves clinched that regular season crown for the first time in league history. Certainly, the players that were here on both sides haven't forgotten that night. There's a real tension between these two teams, and it should be a good basketball game tonight.
Is this March 4th or is it January
4th? Feels like March 4th.
Feels like March 4th, but I think slightly it's overrated. You know, I think it's a very early season game, yep. And as I talked to Steve Pico before, it's a lot of players on Stony Brook that have not been through the Vermont series before, so a lot of guys haven't seen it. So I think because of what happened last year, this is slightly overhyped. Yes, it's a big game because of you have the two champs, the regular season champ and the conference champ, going at it tonight, and it pretty much would set the tone for the conference championship. But still a lot of games to be played, you know, between now and the conference tournament. Yes, it's a big game, but it's not really the end of the world.
At the same time, a bit of a measuring stick for the Seawolves here. This is that Vermont team, like we said, expected to take a step back. Instead, they've been the best team in the non-conference part of the season among the nine America East schools. So really, the Seawolves would love to see how they stack up here on their home floor against this Vermont team that's got some stud players. They've got Evan Field, a guy who's been here, who's really stepped up his game this year. He's the team's leading scorer at 17 points per game. And this new guy, Brian Vogel, is a terrific freshman who is kind of like Tommy Brenton 2.0, the way he started his Vermont career. Two guys the Seals will certainly have to watch out for as they try to stack up against the defending champs.
Vogel, very good player, leading candidate for the America East Rookie of the Year. And, you know, he's doing very, very well at this point. So I think that Stony Brook really needs to really play a physical game. They're going to have to against this team. They've got a lot of experience, as you mentioned. But if you're Stony Brook, a win today would really get Stony Brook on a good note. You know, a loss, not the end of the world, but if a win here today, they would really get them on a real positive note, 2-0, especially going on the road.
He touched on a really interesting point that I was actually thinking myself on the way in here tonight, of how different it is this series between what it's been in years past. There's no more Marcus Blakely. There's no Tommy Brenton for the Seawolves this year. No Muhammad El Amin. Brian Vogel, as we just talked about, a new face on the street for this Vermont squad that's really making an impression. But a lot of new faces that haven't taken part in this series before, as Steve Michael will talk about in just a couple of minutes. But guys that are playing significant minutes for the Seawolves, like the freshman Anthony Mayo, Anthony Jackson, Dave Coley, transfers like Al Rapier, freshmen like Brian Vogel that haven't taken part in this series yet. It's going to be a very different feel to this game tonight than what it's been in years past. There's not really that history at the same time. It's very prevalent in the stands.
Yeah. Vermont basically has more pieces from the rivalry than Stony Brook does have. But both have seen films of each other. Both knows the importance of it. You know, Stony Brook has won the last two games. You know, so the rivalry is there, and I think Stony Brook is going to find out. Vermont, excuse me, going to find out a lot about Stony Brook's new players and Coley, Rapier. You know, those types of guys. McAllister sat through it last year on the bench, but he's a new player also. He's a, considered almost like a freshman. So it's a lot of new players. It's almost like when the Red Sox and the Yankees continue right. the rivalry. It's just new players there.
Right.
The rivalry will continue. And Vermont wants this game big. Stony Brook wants this game big because, you know, a lot of people feel Stony Brook's not the same, obviously, with not having Tommy Brent and Chris Martin, you know, and Muhammad El Amin, the leading scorer. So Stony Brook wants to prove they're just as good as Vermont or even better. Vermont wants to prove that we're just consistently good. You know, we just want to continue the dominance. So the rivalry will continue, just some new names tonight.
Now this should be a terrific matchup. These are the two teams that have posted the top records in the conference over the last 27 games, last couple of seasons or so, when Vermont comes in the top offensive team as well as the top rebounding team in the America East. Earlier this afternoon, Jeff Bernstein had a chance to catch up with the Seawolves head coach, and here are Steve Peichel's thoughts heading into this big early conference matchup.
Tonight's game between Stony Brook and Vermont. We're talking to the head men's basketball coach, Steve Peichel. And, Coach, before we talk catamounts, you always like to stress about winning the road game, especially in the conference. And the Seawolves got off on a good start winning at UMBC.
Yeah, I mean, pleased. Anytime win a road game, I liked our defense for about 28 minutes or so, 29 minutes. I think we're starting to form that identity a little bit, that we gotta really defend. Had a great night out of Marcus Rouse, and Danny Carter made big plays. But what I was most pleased with was down the stretch, we were 8-for-8 from the foul line, and it was four different players, and everyone made free throws to kind of wrap up the game. And, you know, that's something we've learned how to do, as opposed to early in the year. We struggled from the line wrapping up games.
I spoke to Mike during the game, and I sort of concluded that it was a real team effort. You made a lot of rotations, and guys really made contributions.
Yeah, I mean, it's really going to take that throughout. I mean, if we play defense the way we're supposed to, we got to put fresh bodies in. We have guys that are young and that, you know, can't sustain that kind of intensity for long. So, you know, getting some good efforts off the bench by Preboye and Dave Coley hit a big shot at the end of that game. We've got to keep subbing guys in. Dallas has now become one of our guys off the bench that has to bring us good minutes. And Eric, we get more and more comfortable playing him minutes. So, you know, it's starting to take shape a little bit, our rotation. You know, because of the injuries, you really are kind of limited in your rotation. And I think the guys are starting to feel more comfortable. And certainly tonight we have a huge test. And we'll see where our defense is, you know, playing the best offensive team in the league.
Still a full season to go, over two months, you know, but this Vermont team has been the best non-conference. Where do you see this game tonight?
You know what? I mean, we have to, again, you know, it's our defense versus their offense, and they lead the league in assists and field goal percentage and points per game. And, you know, we're right there, you know, limiting teams to least points per game in our field goal percentage defense. So we're going to have to play well. I mean, we really are on both ends of the floor, too. This isn't just our offense can really help our defense. You know, we got to have some good nights out of our post people because they're certainly going to be tested tonight. You know, this is the best team in the league. Vermont's playing the best. They have, you know, experienced group, and Akui's been around for a long time, and Evan Fields been around for a long time, and, you know, they have a couple transfers now that are playing good minutes and that are good players. So we're going to really, really have our work cut out for us against a good basketball team. So we have to be ready for 40 minutes, Jeff, playing good basketball.
Yeah, I know, you know, you've seen a lot of film on Vermont. The players have seen a lot of film, so they know him, but it could be a good thing that some of the new guys for Stony Brook really haven't seen saw the history about Vermont. They're just going to play their game.
You know, a lot of our guys haven't seen them. You know, when you go to Al Rapier and Anthony Mayo and Dave Coley and AJ and Eric, I mean, so you're talking about half of our lineup that's going to play tonight. You know, we only had one day to prepare, too. They've had 7 days to prepare for us. They have a little advantage in prep time, but sometimes that's good, too. Sometimes you know, just playing, you know, helps these guys stay focused on basketball. So I'm hoping that our one day to prep was enough. And, you know, I'm hoping that our guys come out and play. I know the veterans know how important the game is and how good Vermont is. So hopefully they shared some of those messages with the younger guys.
Coach, best of luck tonight.
Thank you.
And that's the Seawolves head coach, Steve Peichel, as we're about 5 minutes away from the start of tonight's basketball game between the Seawolves and Vermont. Seawolves coming in 6-6 overall, 1-0 in America East play with an 8-point victory over UMBC on Sunday afternoon. Vermont 9-3. This is their conference opener. Going back to that game, though, Sunday, it was Marcus Rouse leading the way for the Seawolves with 17 points, but Danny Carter stealing the show at times with his effort. He scored 10 points, a lot of those coming in crunch time, including two very clutch three-pointers. Seawolves had some big leads in that game. UMBC was able to claw its way back in and get within 1 point on two occasions, and both times Danny Carter at the other end of the floor hit a big three-pointer to push that lead back to four, and eventually the Seawolves were able to pull away thanks to some timely free throw shooting down the stretch of that one. Kurt Helton, you've been talking about it the last month or so, but Danny Carter, given the opportunity to get into the starting lineup this season, he has made the most of it. He started every game for the Seawolves, is back in the lineup tonight, and we've really seen his metamorphosis from bench player to veteran.
Well, you know, you set me up perfectly, because the two hottest Seawolves right now are Danny Carter and Bree Preboye, and they're coming from different places. You know, Steve Peichel refers to Bree Preboye and says he wants him to be the X factor, just a guy that brings high energy, doesn't quantify his performance at all with numbers. But with Danny Carter, it's different. He's a junior. He needs leadership, but he also needs productivity. And with that productivity, he needs some consistency. Now, Danny is enjoying career highs at 6.2 points per game, 4.6 rebounds a game, and that doesn't sound like a lot. But here's a guy who just basically was doing what Preboye is doing now. Just come in, give us what we need. Tonight it could be rebounding. Tomorrow night it could be points. The night after that it could be free throw shooting or some tough post and or experience post defense. Now Danny is being asked to give you all of that each and every night. And if you look at the numbers, they've just been creeping up steadily, steadily. And you go back to that big double-double you had back on November 21st. We keep using that as a sort of a reference point, but then he's had his moments. You guys saw it down at UMBC, and I listened to your call, and, you know, watching the tape with the coaches, no more important moments in the game than two times the Seawolves up a mere 1 point trying to stave off UMBC. He hits big threes, and then down the stretch, a tip in as well. You know, that's what you need from your upperclassmen and management.
And Preboye, as you said, 9 points in that game, 6 rebounds to go along with that. And Preboye, a factor in the contest, came away with a steal, had an assist as well, so starting to get it done in multiple facets of the game, not just confined to that role of high flyer, electric player, but starting to play better fundamental basketball as well, and that's important for him.
Look, you need to look no further than his free throw shooting. 77%, worked hard, got in the gym to really work on that. The other thing he's been trying to do is come up with a reliable mid-range game. Can't just be a one-trick pony in this league. Can't just be athletic. There's a ton of guys in this league who are that. What are you going to do to refine your skills? Pree has taken it on himself to get into the gym on his own without supervision. There are only so many minutes and so many NCAA-mandated hours that coaching staffs can spend with players. Players have to dig deep, find that competitive desire, and fuel it from within, and he's doing that.
Anthony Mayo, freshman, continues to play well in the low post as well, has shown some range with his shot too, Jeff.
Yeah, Mayo's done a really nice job blocking shots inside, making moves inside, and actually shooting the jump shot, something that we really haven't seen. And you got guys like Mayo and Rapier, and, you know, especially watching the UMBC game and seeing in the non-conference, by February, I think if these guys can continue to develop, they could actually fill Tommy Brenton's numbers and possibly more, just offensively and defensively. So, you know, having those two guys is really, really, really going to help. By the way, State of the America East, we'll have our annual guest, Commissioner Patrick Nero, who is here for the game, obviously, for this matchup. So we'll talk to Patrick Nero about a number of things about the 2011 season.
And always good to hear from him and see what's going on. But I'll tell you what, the night is an interesting one. And obviously, you know, I heard you guys talking about the rivalry. In Vermont's mind, they're looking at it and saying, hey, this ain't no rivalry. We're the top dogs and have been the top dogs running for quite some time. for the Seawolves. They want to say to Vermont, look, last year was not an aberration. It wasn't a fluke. We're here to stay. Yeah, we're outgunned right now. We're not at our best, but we're still pretty good. What Vermont has done a terrific job of is they've compiled depth where even though a Marcus Blakely is no longer there, they still got weapons. Seawolves want to show, you know what, we recruited some weapons too. David Coley, Al Jackson, you know, Eric McAllister, guys like that. We got some guys coming off our bench too.
Should be a good one here tonight. We're going to send it down to courtside for the national anthem. Tip-off coming up in just a moment. National anthem here at Pritchard Gymnasium in just a couple moments to go. The introduction of the starting lineups and then the home opener here in America East play for the Seawolves. Tough task from the get-go. The 9-3 Vermont Catamounts, defending conference champs, are in town for tonight's contest. Let's take a look at those starting lineups. Started things off with the Vermont Catamounts, and in the backcourt it'll be senior guard Joey Akui, 5'8", 155-pounder out of Lincoln, Rhode Island. The best free throw shooter in the league, mind you, 25 of 26, a ridiculous 96%. Guy who simply does not miss. He also had 6 of 10 points coming against Mount St. Mary's last time out for Vermont, a big overtime victory for the Catamounts. That was the last time that Vermont played 6 days ago, so a little bit of a layoff through the New Year's holiday for Vermont. Also in the backcourt is Brendan Bald. He's a sophomore guard going at 6'4", 200 pounds from Millersville, Maryland. Up front is Luke Apfel, redshirt freshman. Missed last season with an ACL injury. He is back and playing significant minutes for Mike Lonergan's team. He goes at 6'8", 235 pounds. Then it's Brian Vogel. We talked about him in the pregame show. The freshman forward, 6'6", 210 pounds. Leads the America East in rebounding. He's second in the league in assists and steals, as we call them, kind of a Tommy Brenton 2.0. It's almost as if last year when Vermont was leaving, Mike Lonergan took a little bit of Tommy's hair, went to the chemistry lab, and grew himself his own version. And Vogel has been terrific so far for the Catamounts. But the leading scorer is Evan Fiel, a 6'8 senior from Durham, North Carolina, who comes in averaging 17.5 points a game, 7 rebounds a game, and scored 20 or more points 5 times this season. Meanwhile, for the Seawolves, it'll be Brian Dewar and Marcus Rouse in the backcourt. Dewar, the team's leading scorer at better than 14 points a game. Marcus Rouse, the team's leading scorer against UMBC, depositing 17, had the hot hand from three-point range in the first half, and has started all but one game since returning from an early season injury. Up front for the Seawolves is junior transfer Al Rapier, 6'7 forward from Chicago, Illinois, and it's Danny Carter, who makes his 13th start in as many games for the Seawolves. He goes at 6'9", hailing from Windsor, England. And in the middle is the freshman Anthony Mayo at 7 points against UMBC. Comes out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 6'9", 210-pounder Mayo, who's up averaging just about 5 points a game now and is showing a little bit of range, as we talked about with that jump shot, and has been able to get it done in the post both offensively and defensively.
Well, keys to tonight. The Seawolves kind of felt that they got to do a few things against this edition of the Vermont team versus what they are right now. Got to get some easy baskets. So that means they've got to run when the opportunity presents itself, get out there in transition. You mentioned it before. They have to be physical. Vermont loves to pound the board, so they've got to block out. And then the other thing is tremendous pressure. They've got to exert ball pressure on the point guard. Joey Akui, Simeon Marsalis have shown they will turn it over, as will the Vermont team. They're actually last in the league, believe it or not, in turnovers. They have a league worst. And then the other thing is that they've got to pressure Vogel, because he's a surgeon out there. He looks you over, carves you up with his passing.
The other game, by the way, we'll be tracking tonight. New Hampshire is at BU, and the other feature matchup of the evening.
Opening tip, one back by Anthony Mayo over Evan Fields. So the Seawolves start with the game's opening possession, going from right to left in this first half of play. It's Mayo inside, backing down Field. Turnaround hook with the left hand. Sits on the rim, does not fall. Goes out of bounds, and last touch by Al Rapier will go over to Vermont. Seawolves wearing their home white unis with the red letters and numbers. Red, white, and silver trimmed down the shorts. And Vermont in the road greens with the yellow lettering and numbers. Yellow and white trim. And for Vermont, going from left to right, it's Brian Vogel on the left wing. Gets it to Fjeld at the free throw line. Drives in against Mayo. Strong to the basket. Can't get his runner to go off the glass. Danny Carter has the rebound for Stony Brook and outlets ahead for Brian Dewar. Screen from Carter as Dewar goes left side. Throws the ball high in the air into the corner for Rouse. Left corner three. And he knocks it down. So Marcus Rouse, who had the hot three-point hand in the early minutes against UMBC, gets the Seawolves on the board. A minute in. 3-0 Stony Brook.
Well, last year, the leading assist guy for the Seawolves was Tommy Brenton. Brian Dewar has had to assume that role along with being the leading scorer and the leader and everything else.
Vogel drives in, pulls up underneath, passes across the paint to Fjeld, waits, goes off the window, and gets the easy right-hand layup. Puts Vermont on the board. Minute and a half played. 3-2 Seawolves as Carter hands off to Rapier. Now Rapier up top. Passes to Carter. He tries a three from the right wing. That's short. Rebounded by Luke Apfel, the redshirt freshman. Head to Akui. Takes it up the far sideline, left side of the floor. Passes back for Vogel. Vogel tries to make a move on Rapier. Gets contact off the dribble, and Rapier gets called for the game's first foul.
But that's what Steve Pikel wants. He'll take that foul, because when you watch the films of Vogel, he'll stand there, wait, look, identify, and then just make a precision pass. Can't allow him to do that. Got to pressure him in his face. Not a great shooter.
Akui off the inbound takes it right side. Passes to Fjeld at the free throw line. Back to Akui. Free throw line extended right side of the floor. Circles in. Kicks it out to Vogel in the corner. Passes up the left side three. Fires a pass across the paint for Akui. Pulls up from 18 feet. Knocks down the jumper. And puts Vermont in the lead. 4-3. 17:50 remaining in the opening half. Just underway here at Pritchard Gymnasium. Glad he could join us, along with Kurt Hilton and Jeff Bernstein. Now Mike Solano, as Al Rapier drives in and gets it off the left side of the window and through. Rapier, a little move to the basket there, just cut across the paint and then drove hard to the basket. Puts the Seawolves back up by one. Now outside, it's Brendan Bald straight on three. Quick release and no good, as it's hard off the back iron and tracked down along the baseline by Brian Dewar.
Yeah, Dewar lately has done a nice job on the boards helping out.
Dewar to the right corner. Up top for Rouse and around the perimeter, Carter waits and hands off for Rapier. Takes it to the top of the arc. Dishes back for Carter. Hard pass. Almost out of the reach of Brian Dewar. Able to corral it with Akui all over him. Carter hustles out to set a screen, but Dewar loses control of the ball, and it's Vermont the other way. Ahead to Apfel. He will throw it down with two hands. Apfel was the guy who stepped up on defense to double-team Dewar, forced that turnover, and then was alone down court for the jam. And puts Vermont back in front, 6-5, 16:44 remaining and counting here in half number one. Dewar, double team, high on the right side.
Yeah, Marcus Rouse is going to have to come over and try to help out Brian there. Can't be left alone with the trees and against Vermont.
Well, if you get to the sideline, what Vermont likes to do is trap there. And so that's why Dewar has to get over. And being very physical with the Seawolves now, Dewar's gotten bumped a couple of times, no call, but now Apfel will pick one up there.
Now there was a pass on the far side that was tipped out of bounds, and then off the inbound, Dewar gets knocked down, and the foul called against Apfel, his first and Vermont's first. Fresh 35-second clock as Rapier takes it into the paint. Dishes back for Mayo along the baseline, left side of the floor, guarded by Fiel. Kicks back up top to Carter, who unleashes to Dewar. Dewar waits, shovels for Marcus Rouse, pulls up, long three from the right side, good. Wide open, Marcus Rouse, the way he's been shooting lately, and had a feeling that was going to go down. Seawolves back in front by two.
You know, he's got the two knee sleeves on. He kind of just shuffles out there, going 2 miles an hour, and all of a sudden gets a ball in his hand and the light goes on.
Fresh body set to check in for the Seawolves. As we're almost at the under 16 timeout, Vocal. Passes across to Fiel, 12-foot jumper in range by the mustachioed Evan Fiel. Tie the game at 8, 15-40 remaining in the first half as Akui picks up Dewar crossing midcourt. Pass across to Rouse up top for Carter, directs traffic. Carter flings it over to Rapier. One-on-one with Vocal, drives it in. Triple team, puts it up in traffic and gets the friendly bounce off the backboard. So Rapier keeps his composure there at green jerseys all around him and able to put it in. And now we get a whistle and a foul away from the ball. And it's Danny Carter going to be the guilty party.
And that's something that, with the drive that you saw there by Rapier, that the Seawolves feel is going to be available all night. They feel that Volko can be beaten off the dribble by Rapier. Rapier is equal in size and height, but a better overall athlete. But Volko tough as a defender, and they play good team defense.
Brings us to the first official timeout of the evening. 15-17 remaining in the first half. Score Seawolves 10, Vermont 8. You're listening to the longtime home of Seawolves Sports, WUSB.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Back here at WUSB, we're going to look at some scores. The BU, by the way, the BU New Hampshire game is going to be starting at 7:30, so we'll get you scores on that. Top 25 college basketball that's going on tonight. Pittsburgh is at Providence. Pittsburgh with a 10-6 lead. Connecticut is at Notre Dame. Notre Dame with a big start. They're up 13-5 in that game. Indiana is at Minnesota. Minnesota up 9-7. And Arkansas at Tennessee. Other games today, Southern Illinois and Bradley, South Carolina State and South Carolina, Morgan State, Baylor, and West Virginia is at DePaul.
All right, so another busy night. Meanwhile, back here at Pritchard, 10-8, Seawolves on top of Vermont. Both teams shooting well in the very early stages. Both teams 4 of 6 from the floor, the difference being the 2 3-point goals made by Marcus Rouse, as he started right where he left off in the first half against UMBC. 2 of 2 from the floor, both coming from long range, nearly 6 points for him. And Al Rapier getting it done down low. He has the other 4 points for the Seawolves. Early rebounding edge, neither side establishing. It's 2-2, so pretty even through the first 4-plus minutes of the ball game. Brendan Ball, inbounding from the near baseline, gets it in up top to Fiel, as it poked away by Dallas Joyner. Fresh onto the floor for the Seawolves, along with Cree Preboyer, Dave Coley, and Anthony Jackson. Only Danny Carter remains from the starting five. Meanwhile, for Vermont,